In a world of podcasts, one rises in the night to destroy them all. The elder god in an ocean of noise, the Cthulhu of the airwaves. This is Spoiler Country.
All right, everybody, welcome again to another episode of Spoiler Country. Today on the show, we have a treat for you guys. We have Ryder from the Aftershock Comics, Beyond the Breach number one, Ed Brisson. Ed, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. I'm surviving. So well, that's something.
No, that's all you can do right now. So I say Beyond the Breach, but man, you stay busy. You have a ton of projects.
I do.
So
I try to, yeah.
I want to get into that. I want to get into how you got started in comics to begin with. And eventually I want to work our way around to Beyond the Breach and what people can expect from that. And we'll go from there. So you're a comics writer, man. How long have you been in comics?
So professionally, I guess, since my first paid sort of comics, 9 years now, I guess. My first thing that came out through a publisher was Comeback that I did with Michael Walsh and Jordy Belair, and that came out in 2012. But I have been sort of doing comics and self-publishing since about 1994. Wow. I started out, I wanted to be a comic book. And anyone who's heard me on a podcast before has probably heard me talk about this, but when I started, I wanted to be a comic book artist back in the 90s. And this was sort of like early days internet. So for all intents and purposes where I lived, it's no internet. And so I didn't have access to writers. And so I didn't have access to scripts or things to draw from. And I did manage to meet one local guy who was a writer, but he was kind of, it was a weird experience to have. He had no experience, but also wanted to own everything. So he was going to bring me on to draw this thing and not pay me. And then he was going to own everything. And I would get like, I think he was offering me 10% of back end or something crazy. And his writing wasn't very good. So I decided, you know, that if I was just looking for scripts, and this is sort of the only available option, I would just write for myself. So back in 93, 94, I started just writing comics sort of as, it was meant to just be like a short-term thing until I could hopefully meet a writer and team up with them. But it ended up being a thing that lasted, I guess I was writing and drawing my own stuff for about 16 years.
That's 94 wild.
Until about 2010. And around 2010, I realized that I actually really, really enjoyed writing and really hated drawing. And so I stopped drawing and just focused on writing. And, I did that. I started a series called Murder Book, which was a series of short crime stories that I would post online for free that I wrote. And I would sort of rope some friends in to draw. And from that, I sort of started to get a little bit of attention. I met up with Michael Walsh and we put together Comeback, which I think was the third or fourth pitch that we'd sent into Image. To get that picked up. And then as soon as I got one book in at Image, I just kind of, I think I'd been working so long to get to that point. It'd been 18 years, I think, at that point since I started self-publishing, that I just started like pushing like put together as many projects as I could. I had like a bunch of projects that I had been working on over the years, script-wise, that I sort of drug out and dusted off and fixed up. Or, if I teamed up with an artist and we would sit down and figure out an idea together. So yeah, it was 2012 was my first Image book. I think 2013, I did my first couple things for Marvel. That was 2013 for Marvel. And then there was almost like a 3-year gap before I did anything else for Marvel. And then in 2015, I did some stuff for DC. But yeah, essentially since 2012, I've been working pretty consistently.
That's awesome. It blows my mind that you started you don't look old enough to have started in like the mid 90s. So, and it took you, to 2012 to put out the book at Image. I actually had somebody ask me a question about Murder Book. So I run a group called the Comic Jam, and we're kind of an online workshop where we get artists and writers together to do one page shorts. And it's all about learning how to work with, somebody else has the same drive as you do, and also experimenting with different styles, learning how to write, learning how to cut the fat on a page.
Sure.
And it's to help build portfolios and all that other fun stuff. Anyway, they wanted me to ask how you got everything together for Murder Book. Did you grab all these artists and writers, did you grab all these artists and pay them to do the shorts for you? Or was this buddies that you, did they work in trade? How'd you find
them? So I was lucky enough in that because I had been self-publishing for so long, I had a ton of friends in comics. You know, we were all kind of same level self-publishing and wanting to sort of break in. And so I was lucky enough that I had friends who I could turn to and say, like, hey, I've got this 5-page script or I've got this 10-page script. You know, would you be interested in doing it? And, you know, a lot of them were still building their portfolios. And so this is like an opportunity to build a portfolio for them. I know that I was very lucky in that situation. You know, it did obviously take me 18 years of self-publishing to sort of have this, or 16 years, sorry, to sort of build this group of friends around me. But yeah, I was lucky enough that I had people I could turn to. And we largely did it. Nobody was being paid. I wasn't being paid. They weren't being paid. It was just a thing that we were doing. When it came out, like when the books came out, I would give them a portion of what came in from the books. Obviously, we'd split it when some money started coming in. But for all of us, it was more or less a chance for us to put something out there and sort of prove ourselves, I guess.
Yeah. That's basically what Comic Jam is doing, which is awesome.
Exactly. And we, like, you know, I lucked out in that, like, almost everyone I worked on Murder Book with ended up going on to do other stuff. I'm not saying that that's anything to do with me. They're just super talented people that I happen to, you know. But, you know, Simon Roy
gave him that Brisson bump.
And like Simon Roy and Johnny Christmas and Michael Walsh.
Johnny's awesome.
Yeah, and a ton of others, you know, who went on to do other stuff. Actually, funny enough, originally Declan Shalvey was supposed to do one of the first Murder Books.
Oh, wow.
But then I got swooped up by Marvel, and we just couldn't make the timing work. He did one later on when I did stories through Dark Horse Presents for it. But yeah, the short answer is I was lucky enough to know these people. The thing I usually tell people, the benefit of doing short stories like that is that you know, if you can hire on, like if you're not lucky enough to have a friend who's an artist who wants to work together and is happy to do that, you know, just trying to, if you're doing like a 5-page story, it's a lot easier to put together that amount of money to hire an artist on to draw it versus a lot of people who will sort of come out and try and do a 200 issue epic.
Yeah.
More of the Rings style, which you run into all the time and I don't understand it, but it's just much easier to sort of get stuff out there. And, you know, doing the short stories, there's a lot of benefits to doing shorts. It's like you said earlier, you learn how to trim the fat pretty easily. You learn how to tell a story concisely. You learn how to work with an artist. The biggest thing I think is that there's that sense of accomplishment once you finish the story.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's just like one page or 5 pages or 10 pages, there's that real sense of accomplishment. And then I think there's that learning experience as well, putting it out there in the wild for the public to consume. And from through feedback, you learn all sorts of other stuff. And it's much easier to do a bunch of those and learn throughout it than it is to do one. Even like, you know, I used to letter comics as well, and I'd always run across people who are doing like 6-issue miniseries that they're funding by themselves. And I think of all of those that I lettered, you know, less than 10% of them finish because it's a very expensive proposition.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just doing very short stories and putting them out on the web or whatever, it's much easier to complete. It's much easier to get your name out there and all that sort of jazz.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the middle of the second Kickstarter for a series that I'm doing, and it's expensive making comics, man.
I'm just in the process of like, putting together I ran a Kickstarter late last year or early this year. God, time means nothing anymore, but we're sending it off to the printer right now. And I'm like, it's such a learning experience. And I have, you know, after years of self-publishing, even just doing this Kickstarter is such a different experience. So yeah, it's a lot of work and a lot of money.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So the first Kickstarter for issue one, we got done and my artist realized that he hated his colors. So we just invested all of our profits from issue one into hiring a new colorist to recolor the entire 24 pages and then also do the second issue. So now we upped our funding goal because it was like bare bones.
Right.
We upped our funding goal to like maybe hopefully turn a profit this time a little bit, but yeah, the main thing though is just getting out there, because it's sure. It's a fun story. But yeah, so you did Murder Book, and then you've done like the Sons of Anarchy thing, which is, you know, keeping in time with like a lot of the crime stuff that you do. How did you end up working for Marvel? How was your experience doing the cape and spandex stuff?
So my experience, how I started working with Marvel is kind of a weird story and not something that I think anyone could duplicate. And that was, I was at C2E2 in 2013. It was a few months after Comeback had come out. And I was packing up at the end of the show, and I would print copies of Murder Book to bring the shows. And I had three copies of issue two and three copies of issue three left, or issue one and issue two, whatever it was. Yeah. I had three copies of each one left. And I just didn't want to pack them and take them back with me. So as I was leaving the show floor, the first three people I saw, I was like, hey, do you want some free crime comics? I just gave them away. And I didn't think anything about it. And then about 2 or 3 months later, I got a phone call, and it turned out that one of the people I'd given those two murder books to was a Marvel editor. I didn't know that at the time.
You essentially handed him a business card.
Without knowing. And the thing is, I have a lot of, like, not a terribly outgoing person, a fairly, like, anxious person. So if I had known that was a Marvel editor, I never would have handed them my books. I'm not built that way. So it was just a great experience where, you know, like, it just so happened that the person I handed to was a Marvel editor, and Laura Sankovich, who then brought me on to fill in a couple issues for Nick Spencer on Secret Wars, Secret Avengers. And yeah, it was a weird thing to go over and do the cape stuff. I've been reading Marvel my entire life, so, you know, I grew up on it. But, you know, the thing I had been working on for years at that point was crime. So it was kind of quite a shift. And I tend to be, like, a lot of the stuff I write tends to be pretty dark or pretty depressing. And so, like, I do remember handing in my first outline and, like, Marvel just being like, no, you can't kill, you can't have a character kill 10,000 people and then try and redeem them afterwards. It just didn't happen, but, you know, so it was a bit of a learning curve. I don't think that those issues I wrote are particularly great. I think I was really nervous writing them, and you could kind of see that. There's a lot of stuff I wish I could go back and redo, but, you know, that's just the process. You just learn. And I don't think Marvel thought they were great either, because they didn't hire me back for another 3 years. But it was definitely an experience doing that. And I think, you know, doing that and doing other Marvel stuff over the years, I think I learned that I either have to turn down projects that I'm not excited about initially.
Yeah.
Or if I can't find it, like, there's something I was offered fairly recently that, you know, on a surface level was not something I would ever want to write. But then I found, like, a really interesting twist that felt like it was a me story, right? Like, and that's the thing, is I think when I'm writing Marvel books, I want them to feel like it's me writing, you know, it's a story that could only come from me rather than just sort of...
I mean, that's why they hired you. They want an Ed Brisson story.
For sure. But, like, I think there is sometimes, especially when you start at Marvel, the tendency to sort of, like, try and figure out what it is that they've done and what, like, how to sort of lean into that, which is a mistake I think a lot of people do. And I definitely made when I started. And so that was just one of the lessons I learned, to just sort of lean into the me rather than leaning into the Marvel of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it hard to find, because like you said yourself, you prefer doing, like, the darker, the crime stuff. When it comes to, like, what people would say is, like, traditional, like, Western comics, you know, the spandex and the punch 'em ups and stuff like that, is it hard to find that twist? Is there anything that you do to kind of get you into the zone to go, like, how can I make this mine?
Yeah, I think, yes, it can be hard. I think there are just some characters that, like, I don't think I will ever really connect with, that I don't think, you know, and, like, I'm going to say this and then, you know, regret saying it when, like, 3 years down the road, I have a great idea for this character. But, like, say off the top of my head right now, I can't imagine writing an Iron Man story. I just don't have an Iron Man story in me. Yeah. It just doesn't appeal to me. And I know that there's a million other people that it appeals to and would do great at it. And it's just not for me, I think. And there's a few characters like that that I just don't think I can find a way in. But again, like, things just change. So maybe like 3, 4, 5 years from now, maybe 6 months from now, who knows? I might have an idea for that character. But yeah, I don't know. I think it varies from project to project. Sometimes it's really easy to find a way in. And sometimes it's just like beating your head against the wall. And sometimes, you know, I have, you know, on a couple occasions sort of just turned down projects just because I don't think that there's any for me. I just can't come up with something that feels right for me. And on the other side is, you know, when I started out, I would take projects.
Yeah.
Hoping I could find a way in, and I never found a satisfying way in for me. And, you know, those are projects where I hate looking at them. Every time someone brings them up to sign, I'm like, God damn, I wish I would have turned this book down. You know,
has there been anything that you've written that surprised you, that you went like, holy shit, I didn't think this is going to be my jam, but this is kind of my jam?
You know what? There was a project I pitched, and I'm not going to say what it is because it didn't happen. It's not going to happen. But it was a teen book, which I'm usually pretty not that into doing teen books as the general rule. There are some teams that I will. But there's a teen book that I got offered, and I was like, I don't think so. They were like, just think about it. I can't say. There was one hook in there that they knew I would be really into. So they knew they could get me with that. And I put together a pitch that I, to this day, it's a weird thing because I can't talk about what it is, but to this day, I think is one of the best pitches I've ever written. And it ended up not going anywhere. And I think because it was pretty far out there from what I think they were expecting for this team. But I still think it would have been maybe one of the best things I'd ever written had it gone forward. So yeah, you will get projects that maybe on first blush don't feel like they'll fit, but you know, it's all about kind of playing with it a little bit and sort of seeing what sort of shape you can make it take and see if you can make it work. And I don't know, it's a tough thing to figure out whether or not you can make it work and whether or not it's just worth leaving alone. And yeah. Some writers can do everything. Some writers can take on any project and make it work. And I'm not one of those. I'm not one of those writers. I think I have my particular interests, and you know, I might expand on it, but I there's just a subset that will never work for me.
Is there a genre that you have yet to try that you want to get into?
I don't know, because I've done a lot of. I have written a lot of stuff, so I've done like crime. I haven't done much cosmic stuff at Marvel, which I wouldn't mind trying. The cosmic stuff is stuff I was never really into growing up, but you know, I'm also like a huge sort of sci-fi film nerd. I'm a big film nerd in general, but like sci-fi stuff and horror stuff I love. So I would like to find a place to land with some cosmic stuff, see a way that I can take cosmic. But every time I'm handed a cosmic, you know, idea, I find that my instinct is, how can I ground this as quickly as possible?
Yeah.
How can I take them out of space and like put them, I don't care if they're on a different planet, but I think the part that loses me a lot of time with the cosmic stuff is when everyone's just floating around on ships and stuff. And it's the same with like films and such, or stories all set on boats. Like for some reason, if they're just on vessels the entire time,
yeah,
I lose it. But like, I love Alien, and I love all the Alien movies, and those all take place on
Silver Surfer got collared by Galactus's forces for blah blah. Yeah, man, Ron Lim's Silver Surfer when I was a kid, like that era. Oh my gosh,
oh yeah, stuff was great.
I loved it, and when I think it was like Starlin was writing, and then Ron Mars, that storyline was fan flipping tastic. Yeah, I would love to see some stuff like that again.
See, I don't know. But yeah, I think most genres I kind of had an opportunity to do. I think, you know, the one thing I enjoyed doing a lot, I wrote a series as part of Age of X-Men called Next Gen, which was kind of like a teen X book.
Yeah,
so I had Glob and armor and everything. And that's something I would want to do. I think I want to do more of. I had a lot of fun writing that book. I was really happy with how that book came out. So I think stuff like that. I think the one book that a lot of people are surprised to hear I want to write is I'd love to write a Power Pack book. I love Power Pack from my childhood, which is completely the opposite of anything else that I normally write. And you know, I, as I've said a million times before, I'm the biggest Speedball fan, and one day I want
to make... He got done dirty, man. Somebody needs to write that wrong.
I want to make him cool, man. When I was 13 years old was when they debuted Speedball, and he was supposed to be the next Spider-Man. He was supposed to be like the next big thing, and 13-year-old Ed bought into it fully. And I just, you know, I think that it never, obviously never really lived up to it. And he's kind of been a bit of a joke in the Marvel universe over the last, you know, 30 years or whatever. And yeah, I'd love to do a Speedball book and just do something that's really fun. Not dark. Like I know.
Not emo like Speedball.
No, just a really fun Speedball book.
I've lost track of what they've done with that character now. Like, cause he wasn't like the weird, like pokey suit. Because he
blew up as Penance. Yeah. And then he was teaching at Avengers Academy for a while. And then he is part of Cradle right now. I'm not sure if Cradle is still going on or has wrapped, but it's part of that whole Outlawed series that's going on with Champions and everything. So he's around.
But
obviously not very prominently.
So how was your experience writing in under the X wing of Marvel, I guess?
Yeah, it was. Well, I was like, it's weird for me because I was there before, like the Donna X stuff, and then after. And I think the X office is probably where I've done most of my work since getting. Yeah, it was great. It was fun. Like, I grew up, X-Men was my book growing up. And so it was kind of cool to be part of all of that, you know, and the Donna X stuff was. Yeah, it was one of those things where you're working out before it even launched and you knew it was going to be big and it was going to be popular. And so it was just really exciting times. There was a lot of real, like, just sort of visceral energy in the room while we were talking about the books and working on the books. Yeah, it was cool. It was a lot of, it was really exciting. And it was really cool to be part of that and sort of see how it was being received. And yeah, I don't know. It was great.
Yeah. That whole, like... I was a fan of what they were doing before. I can't think of his name right now. The guy that kind of is
Hickman.
Yeah. Sorry, my brain is shot. I've been up since four. So I was a fan before Hickman came onto the title and really appreciated what they were doing. And it seems like they've doubled down on the crazy. Once the initial Hickman, you know, the plotline started kind of settling down, it's really, really fun stuff. And it's interesting where they're taking it. So I've really been looking forward to seeing, you know, what they're up to. They got some great editors in that department too.
Mm-hmm.
So as a guy who does a lot of his stuff on his own, but also is working for the big two, is it hard to get in the swing of things when you're doing things, you know, as, you know, a Ed Brisson title versus working under the Marvel umbrella or the DC umbrella?
Before I answer, I'm just going to turn my fan because it's sweltering in here.
Do what you got to do, man.
If the fan interferes with the mic, just let me know.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a fun bit of banter. No, it's pretty humid here. Can you hear that?
No.
All right, perfect. We're good. Okay. So yeah, I don't know. I think with the creator on stuff that I do, there's a much longer gestation period on it because usually I'll have, you know, the germ of an idea for a thing. And I'll just turn it over in my head until I have a chance to get to it. So sometimes, you know, it's 6 months later that before I can actually sit down and really start thinking about it. Sometimes it's a year later. I just started outlining a project right now that I've been kicking around since about 2011.
So, oh my gosh.
10 years, you know. So I feel like because, you know, when you're doing creator-owned, especially, you know, before it, before it really starts to go, you can sort of like let an idea germinate for so much longer. And so I think that for me, by the time I go to write it, so much of it has already been thought over that it tends to come fairly easily. A lot of things change as soon as you start writing on the page. Obviously. But, you know, I think I have a fuller sense a lot of times when I sit down. Whereas the big two stuff, it's usually like an editor will come to you, you know, with an idea and just be like, you know, we want a book about Galactus joining the Fantastic Four after eating the thing or whatever. They'll have some sort of idea, you know, not necessarily even that much of an idea. Like sometimes they'll just be like, hey, do you have an idea for, like, for a team, you have an idea for the Champions, you have an idea for Spider-Man or whatever. Or sometimes, you know, they have like a situation that the character has to be in. And so every time with that, you're starting fresh and you don't have nearly as much time to sort of sit on an idea that you do with the creator owned. So I find it feels like a lot more work for me with a big two book to get it off the ground. And also like with creator owned, it's usually so far up my interest alley, you know, like the things I'm working on, that it's already a thing, you know, subjects I know a lot about, or like the research part of that process is fun. It's enjoyable because I'm usually researching a topic I'm already interested in. And then, you know, with the big two, it's like just a lot of like having to, you know, deep dive on back issues and sort of get a sense of the history of that character. If I'm not already aware, my memory lately has been really shit. So I've had to like, even stuff I know, I'll have to go back and reread and just make sure. And so, yeah, but like beyond the prep time, I think once I get beyond that stage, it's kind of the same, you know, moving forward. Obviously with big two stuff, I have to get ideas past the editors, whereas with the creator own, I don't have to do it as often. Depends. Sometimes I'll bring in an editor and they'll try and stop some of my darker impulses. but yeah, it's beyond that, it's kind of just the same.
Do you ever keep up with the title after you've left? Like, is it hard to see what other people do with your guys?
Yeah, I don't. And it's not anything against anyone who's come on a book after me, but it's just sometimes you leave a book before being able to sort of, you know, sometimes you're working on a book and you have like ideas that last you for years on that book. And then, you know, it's sometimes it's canceled prematurely, or, you know, you have to leave it to go work on something else. And it's really hard to look at what someone else is doing with that after you. So
yeah.
I don't think so far, no, I don't think there's a single book where I've gone back and read it after someone else has taken it over, if they've relaunched it under a new, you know, with a new number one and a new creative team, which sounds dickish. And I swear it's not. It's just like,
you only have so much time during the day though. So
it sometimes it feels like, you know, it would be like breaking up with someone, but then still hanging out with them when they're dating someone else, you know, like just the third person there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally get it.
But so yeah, I think that with enough distance, I'll probably go back and look at some stuff. And I think there are some books where if it's just like a mini series or whatever, where it was meant to just be, you know, to wrap after five issues, then I don't have that same sort of attachment. But if it's something where I had some glimmer of a hope that it was going to go on, you know, you always hope it's going to go on for 100 issues. And if I ever had that sort of glimmer of hope, and then the book ends or we switch creative things, and it's a little bit more difficult.
I agree.
This sounds really petty and it's not meant to be. It's just the way I'm going through this.
So you're doing this book right now and Beyond the Breach, and it's more a horror-based title.
It's sort of horror. We'll get a bit more into the sci-fi of it in the second issue. The first issue is really just kind of throwing you into the chaos. And then the second issue, you sort of get pulled back a little bit to show a little bit of what's happening, you know, to try and make some sense of it. But, you know, there's a lot of chaos still going on. But yeah, definitely horror sci-fi.
Awesome. What was your inspiration for this title? Beyond the Breach. It's from Aftershock Comics, by the way.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. This was like just one of those ideas that was kind of just sitting there. You know, Damien and I had talked about doing a book. Damien and I have worked on and off since around 2005. We've done a bunch of books together. We did Cluster over at Boom. We did a bunch of stuff at Marvel. We did a book called Big Idea. We did a murder book story. Yeah, I don't know, Sons of Anarchy. I think we've done like over 500 pages of stuff together. But yeah, he and I had just been talking like at the beginning of the pandemic about a project to do together. He really wanted to do a horror book. And this was an idea that I had probably about a year prior that I was kind of trying to work out. Hopefully I don't think this is going to spoil anything, but.
Yeah. Don't, we're called spoiler country, but yeah, we want people to buy the book.
The idea, I wanted to do a book that was set on Earth, but where different regions of Earth would be sort of rewritten to feel like they were almost different planets in a way. So it's a way that we could travel from planet to planet without leaving Earth. That's essentially
cool. Yeah.
And so that's sort of like what is happening there in the breach at the beginning. We get more of an explanation as we go forward about how that happens and what, if anything, can be done about it. But it was just a thing where like we wanted to sort of build this world where Damien and I could theoretically just tell stories forever, because you know, if we got sick of one location, we just go to the next, and it's a whole other set of dangers and threats and creatures and allies and all that sort of stuff. And it was just kind of built out of that. It was built out of a way that we wanted to see a world for telling stories, and then we started building a story around that to allow us to sort of tell that type of story. And yeah, it went through like a million iterations. I remember when I first started working on it, I was 100% convinced that the first issue would be completely silent. There was going to be no dialogue, no nothing.
Oh, wow.
I got talked out
of
that.
That's an undertaking.
But thankfully talked out of it. I don't think it would have worked. But yeah, so it was just an idea that we were batting back and forth until we kind of shaped it to the thing that we wanted it to be. And I just wanted something that could be dark, but could also be fun. And it could be almost anything Damien and I wanted to be from issue to issue or after.
That's awesome. Aftershock has been putting out some amazing titles lately. I'm really a fan of what they're doing and the people they've gotten on board with them. So yeah, I can't wait to check this out. It looks fantastic. The art in it is really, really well done. So how long is this projected to get?
It's right now, it's just 5 issues. We're hoping that if it sells well enough, we can come back and do another arc or more arcs. But right now, just 5 issues.
So, awesome.
Written 5. Good to go, but yeah, we'll see. Hopefully people pick it up. People pick up one. If not, people pick up 1 and 2, then I'm sure we'll be good to go. I don't want to promise anything I can't deliver, but I know that Aftershock was really happy with the number 1 sales. So
awesome.
Hopefully that
awesome.
Trend continues.
So you're a writer. How do you get into
theoretically?
Yeah. Hey, man. So when you're getting into your work, like, do you have a set routine? Do you like sit down at your desk and go like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, time to start the writing machine? Or do you just write when you get the opportunity? Like, how do you make it happen?
So I used to be very routine based. And I think the thing that helped is when my daughter was younger, I'd have to walk her to school in the morning and pick her up from school afterwards in the afternoon. And so my routine was always like walk her to school. I'd come home and I'd sit down and I'd write. I'd stop at noon. I would have lunch and watch a half hour show. And then I'd work until about 3 o'clock and then don't get her. And that would kind of be it for me for the day. It's like I would just write and then it'd be like 6 hours a day. And then like the rest of my time, like you don't switch off, right? You're just trying to figure out the story for the next day. But by in front of the computer time, it's about 6 hours a day.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
Now I am all over the place. I wish I had a routine, but I don't. My sleep is all over the place. And pardon me. So I just kind of work when I can. And I kind of sit down and I'll write 3 pages and I'll get up and I'll walk, take one of the dogs for a walk, maybe. I'll think about things and I'll come back and then I'll write through. Every time I sit down to write, I try and write at least 3 pages. So, you know, I'll come back and I'll write some more. Then I'll get up and I'll walk around again. But as long as I'm always kind of moving the ball forward. So, you know, like I said, when I sit down the first time, I try and write 3 pages. By the end of the day, I try and have about 5 pages.
Oh, nice.
And I try and just keep going over those pages to make sure that they're great. Hopefully they're great. But the one thing I have been doing is, like, about up until a year, up until the world went to shit, I was taking on too much. And I knew I was taking on too much. And I think it kind of burnt me out a little bit. So now I've cut back drastically. And so I'm taking on less and trying to put more into less as much as I can, you know, especially like hand dictate my own schedules.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just don't have a choice and it all piles up. But I'm trying to get back to a place where I have, you know, about 10 days to write an issue versus having to turn things around into 3 days or whatever. And so that 10 days where I can get up and walk around and write, you know, up to 5 pages a day, then when that script is done, sometimes what I do is I'll put that script away and I'll move on to the next script and just kind of do it. And then when that script is done, I'll come back to the first script and spend another few days on it, because theoretically I'm writing it in 4 days, like the first draft. And then I'll have to put it away and get a little bit of distance of it, write something else for 4 days, and then come back to that first script. And then spend, you know, another few days of kind of trying to fine tune it and change things up. And sometimes, you know, I'll come back to it, like I just finished a script where I put it away. And then when I came back to it, I threw 10 pages away just because it just weren't working anymore. And then I just rewrote those 10 pages. It only took me a couple of days to rewrite the 10 pages. And then like another day or so to fudge around with them. But it doesn't seem very structured. Like, it seems like I'm kind of all over the place, but I just find that that's the way I work best.
Yeah.
It's just kind of being able to write a few things and get up and walk around. I think I do my best thinking about things when I'm walking. And so that's why I try and walk as much as possible.
Are you a listener? Like, while you write, do you listen to anything or do you just have to have it completely silent?
So, you know, for like credibility, I tell people I listen to film soundtracks, like horror film soundtracks and stuff, which I do a lot. I listen to a lot of horror film soundtracks or like stuff by Warren Ellis and Nick Cave or Atticus Ross or whatever.
Really good atmospheric stuff. Yeah.
That stuff is
Warren Ellis is fantastic musician.
It's incredible to listen to while you're writing, but I'll be honest, the stuff that relaxes me the most, that lets me be the most productive, is like Spotify yoga mixes. I don't know why. I just stumbled across them one day and I just put them on, and it's just weird stuff I would never listen to under any other circumstances.
This Yanni track is fire, man.
it just gets me there. It just gets me where I need to be, like mentally. It's just that right sort of level of like being there and atmospheric, but also stuff I can tune out.
I hear you.
So,
man, I went through a phase where I would write while listening. You mentioned Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. I went through a Nick Cave phase while I was writing, and it was the darkest shit ever. Everything was super dark. And then I went into a nuts. Trying to think, this doom metal band, I can't think of their name right now, but it's mostly like atmospherics,
right?
And it took me to some dark places, man. Gotta admit, maybe that's, I should have been listening to yoga.
Even the yoga stuff, I can go there, but it's just like, I don't know what it is. It's just there. I need something that's just, you know, at the edges that I know is there, but I can ignore.
I hear you. What's inspiring you now?
Right now, I don't know. I've been reading a lot of sort of just like crime books lately. There's an author who just sort of discovered and devoured his three books back to back. And I just grabbed his name. I always forget his name. This is me Googling. The writer is... Jesus Christ. Just bring up the movie that you
wrote. Sorry, I asked you the hard questions.
No. This is, like, he's a really good author. So his name's Donald J. Pollock. And he wrote, The Devil All the Time, which was made into a film.
Okay, so that movie was filmed 2 miles away from my house.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. So I live in Birmingham. I'm actually, like, 20 minutes outside of Birmingham. And there's like the scene where they're at the house that was down the road from my house, like his house where he grew up. And then there's the murder scene where they would, the couple would take, you know, hitchhikers or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And like off them. That is a place I have taken my daughter several times to go camping. They will never see that film because it will, you know, obviously they're too young now, but that will taint that place forever. We were watching it and my wife was like, "That's at Oak Mountain." I said, "Yeah, that's right by the dam at Oak Mountain. Holy shit." So yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, his stuff is great. And it's a weirdly like inspiring sort of, he's weirdly kind of inspiring because he was a factory worker. The author was a factory worker until he was about 50 something.
Oh, wow.
And he was going to school and he got his MFA and started writing. And so he's got three books out, Devil All the Time, a collection of short stories called Knock and Stiff, which I guess is based on a town called Pocket City where he's from. And the other one was called The Heavenly Table. And all three of those books are just incredible. So we're reading that. We're reading a lot of Elmore Leonard.
He's amazing.
And I was reading Frank Bill has a collection of short stories I just recently called. I should have all this stuff in front of me. Crimes in Southern Indiana, I remember, which is another collection of short stories. Very dark. But yeah, it's mostly just kind of going back to reading. I've been watching films, you know, comic wise, trying to think of what's really been doing for me. A lot of the James Tynan stuff.
He's good. He's solid.
Nice House by the Lake, and Something's Killing the Children, and there's the other one, the Department of Truth.
Yes, that one is nuts. That title terrible is crazy.
So we joined that. I just been Homesick Pilots, which I really dug a lot. Responding that, I'm just looking around my office. I don't know. I'm terrible when you put me on the spot. I try to remember everything. But yeah, I've been rereading Fractions, Hawkeye, and rereading Batman Year One right now as well, which is one of my favorite books.
I recently did that. And yeah, it still holds up. It's amazing.
Also, Sin City. Sin City is one I haven't read in years, and I've just been revisiting that as well. And that was like sort of a transformative series for me when I was about 18 when it came out. That and sort of Sin City, those two things. Which, if you've read my crime work, it's probably not going to be a surprise that Sin City and Stray Bullets are huge influences.
Oh, yes. I was about to mention Stray Bullets. Yeah. So what's next for you after you're doing, you know, you said 5 issues of Beyond the Breach?
At least 5 issues, hopefully more. What's next? I don't know for sure. I'm in a weird place right now. So I'm working on Predator still. I'm not sure when it's coming out, but I'm on issue 5 right now.
Awesome.
Yeah, the artist is just starting on issue 4. So, you know, we're pushing forward on it. I know it's been delayed, not anything to do with on our end in terms of productivity. It's just, I think they're trying to line up for
COVID screwed everything up. So
yeah,
Yeah.
And beyond that, I was just talking to someone about it. Currently, I have like seven things I'm waiting to hear back on. And obviously, I won't be able to take all seven if the, you know,
yeah,
everything was agreed, you know, goes forward. So right now, I don't know what's next. I know I'm going to be starting on something soon, probably in the next couple of weeks, but I'm not 100% sure what it is right now. So I don't know. It'll be an adventure. You guys can tag along and find out. I am writing actually right now this week. I guess this has been announced. I just realized it hadn't been, but I'm co-writing an issue of Batman Secret Files with James Tynion.
Oh, cool.
Which is not why I plugged this stuff is great, but thankfully working with him and Josh Hickson's drawing it, and it's for Peacekeeper One, who's like this new sort of Batman baddie that has been in the most recent issues. I think we got to see the first big reveal of him in the last month or so. I'm always woefully behind. I'm reading things that came out 3 months ago in issues, so. But I think it's just within the last month that everyone's got to. So I'm writing that. That's out in October, I believe.
Oh, nice, nice. So that's awesome, man. That's exciting.
It is exciting. It's pretty cool. Like James had, like he'd sent me an outline that I'm sort of building a script around. And it's a, yeah, it's a great outline. Really, really interesting story. I think we're doing some lot of really fun stuff with filming in the background of this character. Yeah, and then like these seven things that I'm just sitting here waiting on. So I can sort of just plan out the rest of my year and see what happens.
I hear you. Well, is there anything else you want to shout out before we land the plane?
No, I think just check out Beyond the Breach. If you dig it, tell your friends, you know, tell your shop. I guess in October, check out Peacekeeper. And also Clown Hunter. I guess I have Clown Hunter coming up. I wrote that earlier this year, so I forgot that it's not.
Awesome. And As tack this on to it, where would you recommend somebody go pick that up at? Do you have a local store that you're really into, or just a shop that you're?
My shop here in Halifax. I shop at Strange Adventures.
Strange Adventures.
A lot of folks outside of Halifax seem to know it. So fairly well known store, I guess, but. Yeah, that's my local spot. I'm usually down there once a week picking up comics.
Nice. So you guys hit up Strange Adventures and go and buy Beyond the Breach. So
I said, please do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Ed Brisson, thank you so much for coming on. Anytime you want to come back, by all means, hit us up. I've enjoyed talking to you. And shoot, man, I can't wait to see where Beyond the Breach goes because I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's number two. I think people are really going to dig it. So, a lot of cool stuff. One of my favorite characters comes in.
Nice.
A lot of fun.
Nice. Ed, take it easy, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Stay cool, man.
You too.
All right.
Spaghetti. And we're back.
That's right. We are back. Back in the saddle again. Well, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that as much as we did making it for you. And if you like what you heard and you want to hear more, you got to go check out spoilerverse.com, because at spoilerverse.com we have a plethora, amazing directors and artists of all walks of life and editors and writers. And oh my God, are you a lover of comic books like we are? Then
so
there's
many.
So many amazing people from the comic book world over at spoilerverse.com, and I highly implore you to go there and check it out.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts on our network, like Bridges and the Geekdoms and Funny Book Forensics and Haphazard Adventures and Nerds from the Crypt and so many more.
Misery Point Radio.
Episodes all the time. Go check all of them out and check out all of the reviews and previews and articles we have going up every single day for you, every day on spoilerverse.com for you to check out and to read and to love and to like and to comment. We have a store link. You want to help support the site? You can do it two ways. One, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/spoilercountry. Or go to our store link in the middle of the site there and get a t-shirt, a face mask, a hoodie, something. Look fly as hell and help support the site when you do that, because we get a dollar or two. And, you know, maybe you want to talk to us. If you do, you can do it, you know, obviously on all the socials. But if you go to scpod.us/discord, you can join our public Discord server and come chat with us all day long.
I couldn't say it better myself, dude.
There you go.
You just mouthed out a ton of information at once. And really... I hope you guys enjoy what you're hearing, because we're working our butts off to bring it to you.
We are.
I guess there's only one left thing. One left thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it. There's only one left thing left to do.
What's that?
In an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu. As Cthulhu compels you to open the mind and read more.
Spaghetti. What's going on, everyone? Are you still looking for that perfect one-stop shop for all things pulp culture? You know, that one place where you can hear hot takes about superheroes, Star Wars, video games, and more? Well, fear not. Bridging to Geekdoms is the place for you. A podcast that focuses on the current rumors, scoops, and controversies within the pulp culture world. Hosted exclusively on the Spoilerverse Network, you can find us on any one of your favorite podcatching apps, YouTube, and at spoilerverse.com. So don't miss out on the excitement. Find us and subscribe now.